Three, two, one. And welcome to another episode of The Sovereign Envoys. Today we are joined by Red Templar, Theory QED, and Virgil of the RUFO Discord chat and subreddit. And we have three topics. I've been trying to do something with I've been learning from a friend of ours that there may be a reason to learn how to lucid dream. And that's a stepping stone in possibly astral projection. And I thought, hell, why not? I mean, I'm going to try to learn it. So I'm going to talk about a little bit of the steps that I've taken so far and what it's been like. So there's a few steps to do that. I believe Red Templar wanted to talk about Von Neumann probes, robots from space, and genetic manipulation of pre-existing planets, something to that effect. Theory QED, I'll let you introduce your topic.
Well, first we're going to talk about Von Neumann probes and self-replicating robots that might be able to explore at least a galaxy or maybe even the whole universe.
Your topic, that was Red's.
Oh my god, what is my topic?
That's what I asked you.
Jesus Christ. I'll just think it up on the fly.
Okay. All right. Red, you're up.
Are we getting into religion already?
No.
Are you ready, Red?
Oh, sure, sure. So I think we touched on our last...
So for everybody that doesn't know, how do you pronounce it? And what exactly are Von Neumann probes?
I'm not pausing myself.
Give it a shot.
Von Neumann?
I think it's Von Neumann, yeah.
Yeah, so the general idea is you make a self-replicating machine that lands somewhere, gathers the materials needed to make like a little factory, start pumping out more of itself, and then, you know, they can then launch and go off and do other places and then repeat the cycle. I mean, once they're there, as long as they have, you know, a blueprint or whatnot for other machines, you know, you could basically launch your civilization onto multiple planets.
Now, are these autonomous, or do they have some kind of direct contact with their originators?
If it's far away, you can't have it be remote controlled, and if it's self-replicating, you would have too many for your population potentially, so it would have to be completely like advanced AI powered.
Okay, so but that's the theory. So if there is some kind of technology that we don't know about that can communicate beyond the speeds that we're currently used to, is that something that's also possible for these technologies? Is that within the definition of Von Neumann probe? Can it get to an advanced state where they're basically
AI?
Is it, could people download their brains into these things and become an avatar?
You could have a biological consciousness that uploads themselves either through transhumanism or just direct brain uploading into an AI, and then you could have that artificial consciousness be the Von Neumann probe.
Okay, good. So we're broadening the term of what this probe can be. So this probe can actually be a being, a non-biological being that can withstand the rigors of space travel, but still have its neurological or whatever it uses to process information uploaded to something that can, you know, house its mind.
Well, yeah. And I mean, heck, I could even be a devil's advocate. I think there was some people who attributed similar things to the Greys too. Like, isn't there references to them being like soulless machines and basically automatons? I mean,
touch.
Yeah.
I've heard of something like that too, and somehow they fused at that point it was pure conjecture, but somebody had theorized that if you make an android that's almost a biological android, so you've basically genetically created a being, you could have a being engineered to take nutrients and absorb sunlight, so they could eat basically the rays of the sun and not have to breathe so that they could withstand the rigors of these, you know, wanting atmospheres where there's nothing, so that you don't have to, they don't have to, like, you know, pee, poo, take a shower or whatever. And all those things are pretty much obliterated, and it's all compatible within the ship that houses them to go places. That's a little bit faster than just, you know, a floating body. But once they get there, then, you know, does that make sense? I'm going off the deep end. I'll let you continue.
Not too deep off. I mean, we got the Neuralink stuff coming up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So, Templar, why do you think it's interesting? Why did you want to bring this up last episode? And why do you think it's an important topic to talk about?
Well, I don't know. Like I think I mentioned this in, like, our Discord chat, too. Like, I'm kind of new in on digging into some of this stuff, but I've also had interest in sci-fi themes for a while anyway. And, like, we've had a lot of interesting news that kind of would fit somewhat with that. Like, I mean, what was the new one? I think there's over 100 billion plausibly habitable Earth-like planets in our galaxy alone. I mean, if you have that many, and we've, you know, this universe has been, or this galaxy has been around for billions of years. I mean, even if there's one, you know, species or one other culture that's been around for a few million years before us, I mean, it kind of would just be a, you know, default thing you would do at some point. You know, if you want to get out and see what's going on, just start seeding autonomous machines that can report back with information. And if you have a long game in mind, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get kind of crazy here and take this whole idea to the next level if I can. Obviously, this is going to be all theoretical, but I'll try to make a case for it.
Hey, that's your name.
Yeah, exactly. Theory, QED, theory. So, to start with, we can 3D print organs now. So if you have stem cells, I believe it is, you can form them into, say, a human heart or a pig's heart, and then transplant that organ and have it function inside of a body. So if you extrapolate this technology, which is just in its infancy right now, if you give it another 1,000 or 10,000 years, I think it's totally possible that you could 3D print an entire biological entity, or in other words, you could 3D print an entire human being. So if you have these von Neumann probes, which obviously would be the fastest and easiest way to search the entire galaxy for a habitable world, you could send these probes out. They set up a manufacturing base on moons or asteroids, make more craft, send the craft to other stars. You could colonize or explore the entire galaxy in, I think, around 100,000 years. It's really not a very long time if you're traveling fast enough and you don't have energy restrictions or material restrictions, because you can literally just disassemble an entire small planet and make these robots or an asteroid. But what I'm saying is, if you find a habitable world that you don't need to terraform too much, and it's already pretty much what you're looking for, you could have these von Neumann probes either have an internal 3D printer, or probably more practically, you could set up a new manufacturing base on the planet and then 3D print your entire civilization. Or you could even go so far as tweaking the DNA or tweaking the design of the being so that it would be well adapted to the environment. So you could adjust for things like atmospheric conditions, gravity differences between your home world, also radiation differences. So you could make, like, a darker complexion if you're worried about sunburn versus your home world, something like that. And then after you start building this population, you could use gene editing to change the population in sync with, like, terraforming or geoengineering to change the home world to however you prefer it, either like your original home planet or just something more ideal than that even. And you could even try, this is crazy now, but you could try to import a collective consciousness, or even on an individual level, try to move the consciousness from a person on your home planet, say they die or something, and before they die, they upload their brain to a Dyson sphere or whatever it is, and then you beam that consciousness to the new planet, and then you could try to upload it into the 3D printing person with a neural lace or a neural link that interfaces with the brain somehow. But yeah, sorry, I got a little crazy with that, but I think it's a cool theory.
And just to give people, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Just to give people an idea of how long 100,000 years is, we domesticated dogs about 15,000 years ago, and the earliest structures in the world that we know of, sandstone blocks set in a semicircle with an oval foundation built in Egypt, were found near the border of Sudan. So, very first structures ever, that's 100,000 years.
How long ago?
100,000.
Wait, 100,000 years ago were the first structures?
First structures. I don't know if that means buildings, but it says sandstone blocks set in a semicircle with an oval foundation, yeah. Which would be like possibly the, you know, what we would call a foundation of a home. And possibly right. The home's obviously made of sticks or something. So, and just to think that we've only had dogs for 15,000 years, if it would take 100,000 years to, what did you say, go all around the galaxy?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how fast you're going and also, like, restraints on materials and energy. Like, say you have a solar panel that is, like, 90% efficient, then you could use it even on Pluto and you'd have plenty of energy to make whatever you need. But
well,
if your solar panels are like what we have and they're not efficient, then you would need like Dyson spheres or something closer to the sun, and you'd have to start with like Mercury.
And you gotta expect that some kind of technological upgrades will happen as that time goes on. Like if we've jumped as far as we have in 100 years, you can imagine if, you know,
you could have
1,000 years from now. I don't know. But something that looks like magic to us. Like, we have cell phones, and we didn't have those 100 years ago. So it's just, now we can talk to a human on the other side of the planet. You did that, told somebody that 100 years ago, they're like, we don't even have radio. They're like, you're insane, right?
FaceTime, like, yeah.
Yeah, you can talk to people on the other side of the planet for free on, FaceTime.
Yeah.
It's, you know, people do it all the time now. It's normal. So it's really weird to think how far we've come. So to build that von Neumann probe or anything and just seed the universe, if we don't destroy ourselves first, it should be happening faster, because we're like, if it's possible, then it must be happening, but we don't see anybody doing it. But how come we aren't doing it? But are we close? And that's one reason why we always think we're so alone, is because we don't, quote unquote, see these things, but it's a big universe, and I don't know if we'd actually be able to see things if you look at it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we'd necessarily see it either. No. I mean, it's if like, it was a planned out thing where you were trying to seed the, you know, galaxy for, you know, instance, maybe it's part of the, you know, template you use that you, you know, first drop in your seed stock for whatever you're looking to grow. And then you're looking basically just to hit benchmarks here, and you know, every, you know, X, you know, if you've done it enough times, you probably have a good idea how things are going to go. And you know, let's say 5,000 years into the development of a, you know, semi-sentient species, you know, drop a ship. Okay, hey, now we have a basis for religion to worship things in the sky. And then, you know, another 1,000 years, you drop, you know, another thing that gives them a next step that they can.
Are you talking about enlightening cultures that you find on another planet? Like, if they had nothing to do with it in the first place, they're like, oh, well, let's raise these guys up. Is that what you're talking about?
Or, I mean, maybe it could be the fact that, it could be a deal where they are actually seeding the initial set of species.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm a big proponent of that, actually. Like, they come to a planet like ours, and they do, like, I believe that happens. Every once in a while, they come back and they tweak things and whatever. And there might be more than one of them, but that's my idea, I mean.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's a pretty common idea. But another possibility is that either they did seed the initial life or they didn't seed the initial life. And rather than the zoo earth hypothesis, like what Gabriel's talking about, where they're actively monitoring, intervening, maybe doing gene editing, I think an interesting possibility too is that it could be literally a zoo Earth hypothesis where you have a von Neumann probe that is just sitting around in some kind of orbit around the Earth and is just monitoring them.
Oh, man.
And when we reach a certain level of intellectual sophistication, maybe creation of AI or some other technology like antimatter, or maybe when we get to another star or something like that, some certain level of technological advancement, they might invite us into a galactic civilization, or they might show up and say, you guys made it. You made it past the great filter. Or they might kill us at that point because they see us as a threat. So it might be that they're just watching us and really not intervening.
That's funny, because that, it makes me think of all these theories that the moon is supposed to be, you know, that thing.
The hollow moon,
and it's just a big, so I don't know.
It's crazy.
Well, there was recently a Forbes article that was postulating an idea around this lurker sort of hypothesis.
Yeah.
Right, where there would be, ideally there would be some sort of a presence that would stay at a Lagrangian point watching, right? I mean, I know we've been talking about these von Neumann probes, but some sort of an entity that would be monitoring and watching, you know, human development. And like you had said, if it had exceeded a certain threshold, you know, would take some sort of an action. But yeah, it's an excellent point.
So I think that there's, how many, four of these points, or is there more than that?
I think there's five, yes.
Okay, yeah, and it's basically, for those people that haven't heard of this concept before, it's a point in which you can stay totally stationary because the gravity on both sides or on all sides cancels it out. And there's five of these points that there could potentially be something just waiting there, and we really need to go there and search and see if there is something there.
Yeah, and we haven't yet. One of the things that's been described is, like, imagine two hills next to each other, and those two hills being gravity wells, and in the middle is the body that kind of is just sort of stuck there. It's not going up either one of the hills, and that would be one of those Lagrangian points that would, follow the Earth or any other celestial body and could be in a prime position to really look at and observe, potentially.
Wouldn't it be the opposite of what you just said, like on the tip of a mountain between two dips?
Well, there's different points. I mean, there's different kinds of points too. Like it gets really complicated.
Okay.
But and I think I want to get even more advanced than this. Like that Oumuamua interstellar thing.
No.
Have you seen the papers about that where it's postulated that it might some kind of buoy that's stationary, because it wasn't zooming towards the Earth. The Earth was zooming towards it. Like, I guess it was technically completely stationary relative to its local surroundings or however that works. I don't know.
I'm not sure about that, but I know Avi Loeb from Harvard had done a paper that apparently, from some of the data that they were collecting, observed that when Oumuamua was exiting the solar system, was actually accelerating.
Yeah.
Right? And that was extremely, like, weird.
Right.
So there was some suggestions that Avi had made that it may have been implementing some sort of, you know, solar sails or some other explanation for the acceleration that had been observed.
Yeah, because it's a weird shape and it's very bright, and the acceleration can't be explained by outgassing, so it can't be explained by a comet because it doesn't have a tail, not releasing gas into the vacuum of space. So that doesn't explain it. And it was very slight acceleration. But for me, the light sail thing doesn't make too much sense, because why would it be tumbling, you know? If it is some kind of stationary object, I would assume that when the Earth and obviously the Sun, because it's bigger, when we zoom past it, if it is a intentionally stationary artificial object, it would then need to accelerate back to get to its same equilibrium of not moving, right? So we drag it a little bit out of where it's supposed to be, and then it would need to accelerate a little bit to get back to its original point. So I don't know if that even matches what was observed, but it's something that I think is interesting to think about.
No, definitely. I'm not familiar with all the orbital dynamics with that particular, you know, celestial body, but it's definitely there. I know there's been interest in that, and I think in part because it was the first reported instance of a interstellar object entering the solar system, and And for the folks that are listening, I mean, like, normally when we see or hear of comets coming in close proximity to Earth, those are part of our solar system. They are on very highly eccentric orbits, but they're part of the bodies that orbit our sun. And Oumuamua was the first instance of scientifically of any body that actually came in with an orbital trajectory that indicated that it originated from outside of our solar system. It is not a body that currently orbits our sun. And that's what's really highly interesting. And then, as you were saying, the fact that there was no comma, there was no evidence of any sort of outgassing that's typically associated with something like a comet, also adds to the, strangeness or uniqueness of this particular instance. But what's also interesting is very recently in the last several weeks, there's been reports of and observations of what appears to be another interstellar object that's entering the solar system that does exhibit some of the criteria that we were talking about earlier in terms of, you know, outgassing. So not identical at all to Oumuamua, but still interesting in that it appears, based off of the observations that have been taken, that it is originating from outside of the orbit of our sun. So very interesting. I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, you go from, you know, 150 years of astronomical observations or 300 years, even going back to Galileo, of astronomical observations, never seen anything like this, to all of a sudden in the span of like 2 years, we see two of these interstellar objects entering our solar system. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know about the Oumuamua speeding up while it's leaving. You guys have brought some new information to the table that I didn't know about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if I could, going back to Templer's comments and discussion earlier about the von Neumann probes, it reminds me of, I don't know if anyone on listening or here today has or have read Bill Joy's commentary about why the future doesn't need us, where he talks about this idea of gray goo, which is very similar in a lot of ways to this idea of a self-replicating, you know, nano machine or mechanism. And I know that there's been a lot of discussion around, you know, artificial intelligence and super intelligence and what were to happen if we were to, as humans, create some sort of self-replicating machine, what that could potentially do to our ecosystem. But it's interesting that, you know, when we talk about exploration of the, not just the galaxy, but the universe, you know, and looking at the exponential sort of capabilities of a self-replicating entity in exploring all the vastness of space, how, you know, we kind of think of these probes or these things that could, you know, travel the expanse and search out for other potentially life forms or civilizations and then tying back into, you know, those Lagrangian points of, you know, once they do identify a planet or some place where people are or things are, you know, observe over time. It's very interesting. And it kind of, you know, I think it was earlier I was talking about transferring consciousness or you know, into beings, you know, sort of, you know, going from biological entities to something else. And that's really fascinating. And, you know, all this news recently about like neural nets and machine biological interfaces, it seems like we're on the cusp of some sort of like an inflection point where, you know, we may potentially be able to transfer at least some semblance of who we are as a species, as humanity, into non-biological beings that could go and search through the cosmos. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty mind-blowing, actually.
Would you do that if given the opportunity?
I mean,
on the
one
hand, you get to explore everything. On the other hand, you might be immortal, and that could be a torment, I guess.
it's pretty heavy when you really think about it. Yeah. I mean, like, in it, for me, it begs the question of, like, what is the soul? Like, who are we as individuals? I mean, if you were somehow replicated into some non-biological entity, would you still be you? And it's right. And this goes back to, it's like this like concept of like consciousness. I know we talked about earlier, and I'm sorry to go like completely woo with you guys, but like God, and what is the, if there are other instances of consciousness that exist or intelligence, right? And this ties into, you know, Tic Tac and this idea that there may be
others
outside, others, right? I mean, are they biological? Are they non-biological?
And are they so, minty like, fresh?
Right? And if so, what is their genesis? I mean, and this goes back to, for me at least personally, like thinking about like, we always talk, you know, in science and at least within the realm of, you know, Earth, talking about biological beings is like the genesis, right? And we talk about like panspermia, and maybe we were seeded by some other, you know, life generated outside of Earth, and then eventually it seeded us. But what if there were second genesises or tertiary genesises? What would life look like, completely disconnected from what we know life to be within our, you know, world, our planet that we know life to exist in?
Well,
it's really interesting, right? And maybe life, our concept of life or conscious, however you describe it, this is what's weird. It's not life anymore. Like, what is a machine that's conscious?
It's
interesting. It's fascinating.
Can I try something? Just to lead, please, for fun. But okay, so if you had a biological genesis, and then if that biological, say, figured out how to make machines and then transfer its consciousness to machines or androids that it genetically made, and then what if there was, beyond that, a third one would be something like having an energy body that had no need for a physical body, because you've begun to cross through the space of needing... needing that your sustenance could be taken from not the ether, but like part of that 99.9% of empty space that you can now travel through without encumbrance. And then you could transverse the speeds beyond light. And this is maybe what the stories of these beings are, that beings of like angels or something like that. That's the only way we knew how to describe things back then. But sometimes these things that pass through our walls, and it doesn't necessarily mean they're benevolent or not benevolent or whatever, but like some people, they have communications with things only in dreams or other dimensions you're talking about. And maybe their craft can be somewhere in between too, because they were not only on that level where they're just energy beings, but they've also maintained enough of a semblance of a physicality to their culture that they're still able to connect with us in that frame of reference as well. So it goes beyond, like, it's like the Elohim, you know, those came from above, like the whole fucking angel thing. And maybe there's something to it.
Well, yes. I mean, there's a ton that we just can't perceive.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you think about it, like our eyes and our ears are basically just biological wave detectors.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's whole spectrums that we cannot hear and we cannot see. I mean, what was it, shrimp have like
12 times as many colors that they can see as us?
Exactly.
The clown shrimp or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's stuff that we just can't even wrap our heads around that's could be happening right in plain sight, and just, you know, we're oblivious.
Yeah
What do you guys define consciousness as? I mean, for me, I think it's mostly a spectrum, so you can have like level 1, level 2, level 3, something like that. And
who is it that said it was a basic unit of awareness? I think it was a scientific definition.
Yeah, was that Michio Kaku?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes,
I think continuity is important to that too.
Yeah, it's fair to say that could be a way of describing it, but the word consciousness is a difficult one to grapple with. It's a definition.
But Gabe, for me at least, that's kind of, you know, you're kind of zeroing in on something for me, at least, that's kind of central to this idea of what is consciousness. And that is, you know, well, I should say, our tendency as humans to, as I think I've said before, you know, anthropomorphize what we would describe consciousness to be. That is to, you know, we have this confirmation bias as humans, as people, to look at things around us that are non-human and sort of imprint on those concepts, these humanistic sort of ideas. And what happens when you are talking about something that is completely, and I use the term, I'm going to use this term sort of purposely, but like alien, truly in every sense of the word. Like, what does that mean? I mean, we think that perhaps some of these intelligences are human-like or humanoids, but like, what if it's completely detached from every concept, every idea, every imagination that we have of what it means to be conscious? Like, what does that look like? And that's kind of like freaky,
right?
Like, and I think I'd mentioned this in the RUFO Discord before, but you know, this idea of like a Lovecraftian nature to potentially consciousness or things outside of the realm of what we as humans consider to be, you know, intelligent beings.
Right.
And that's kind of like mind blowing, at least for me.
Well, and that's why we think possibly, even if you look at the universe zoomed out, I'm not sure if that's a legit science thing, but some people are saying that one picture where you zoom out on the universe as far as you can go, and the supercomputer that generated that image, somebody said, "Hey, that looks just like a neuron," and that's the thing too. Like I remember in the episode previous to this, I said, "So what if we are just a dream that has physical constructs as a framework, and we're all part of one dreamer?" Right.
And what if we're a simulation?
Well,
that's the dream.
That's,
right? We're associating this idea of what a dream is.
Right.
Really,
a different
kind of simulation.
Different kind of quote unquote computer. Right. Quantum, giant quantum computer where anything can happen. Yet the semblance of reality is that things kind of have laws and rules that, you know, in this simulation generally follow certain. You know, math will explain it if you have the right assumptions. So that's kind of what the supercomputer, I guess you would say, if we're in a simulation, that's what that whole memory part of that supercomputer is for. And we just see our own version of it when we look out there. So we can make assumptions. When we dream, we don't have that framework. So any other kind of consciousness could have had a different dream while looking at the same framework and come to different conclusions because it's had different assumptions. So basically you could have like something that we can't comprehend, like that one. I think there's some people with some kind of mental disabilities that'll have like just a savant ability, and not, they don't all have to have mental disabilities to have a savant ability, but you know, like that one, there's this one guy, he can learn a language in a week, but he can't tie his shoes. Like that kind of level of detail and focus on one thing could be completely different if you were raised in a different environment, but in the same structure, in the same information setting as the world that we're in, because the laws won't change, but the way that being will. And then it kind of goes into what, remember Elizondo was talking about mankind's, he said, maybe there's different cultures that are out there that are, you know, have loves and hates and likes and dislikes. And basically like, you know, any living thing, it tries not to get hurt and it tries to go towards nutrients or something to that effect, where it has good things that it wants and bad things that it doesn't want. And you know, the variety of emotions that arise through the complexity of how those interact within its quote unquote mind. But that you could scale that up to be as big as you want, like the entire galaxy could be alive and have its own will to a certain degree. And we don't know that because it'll move so slow. We can only see a small sliver of that.
And Gabe, what we're, I know there's been some papers released fairly recently talking about like plants. I know it sounds kind of, again, sort of,
is this
hippy dippy or
is this recent? But... because Theory was talking about this and I used to be into it. So is this recent?
A newer fairly one? Recent. I mean, the last like 3 years or so, but this idea that plants are communicating with each other.
Oh, for sure. Pheromones. Yeah,
exactly. And you kind of touched on it earlier, but this potential, you know, concept that, you know, we're moving as humans and within the span of our own, you know, timelines or lifetimes are not witness to some of the other biological or I guess other interactions that may exist within, you know,
our own environment
around us, our own environment. Exactly.
Yeah. They all have languages, yet we cannot talk to them because we don't know how.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. It's not that they're stupid. It's that they were evolved to deal with things differently. Right. We can't, don't judge a fish by how well it can climb a tree, right?
Exactly. It's fascinating. It truly is.
Along the same line, there was an article not too long ago about how some forests have fungus that help facilitate those kind of communications between the trees, where they're able actually to use something like a stock market to trade in the different nutrients and whatnot that are around them. It's crazy stuff. It actually gets pretty sophisticated if you read into it. Like they value how much their trading partners are giving them. If there's somebody who's being stingy, they'll actually get less in the next like trading cycle. They can reverse trades halfway through. It's insane stuff.
That's right, Templar. It's this whole idea of symbiosis, right? And we're looking at kind of at a micro level, but like taking a few steps back, looking at a more macro level. I mean, what if that same symbiosis does exist, but on a planetary scale or on a interplanetary scale or on a intergalaxy? I'm sorry, I'm making up a word.
Intergalactic.
Intergalaxy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Intergalactic scale. Exactly.
Right? You know, like kind of like Avatar, hey, where everything kind of talks to each other on the planet. You know. Maybe not, but you know.
Templar. But Templar. I mean, that was I recall the article or the work that you were describing, and that, you know, there may be this intermediary biological entity, you know, fungus that is a medium for communication between different, you know, plants, trees, I think, if I remember correctly, and that it, you know, it's this glue, it's this connective tissue, it's this sinew that connects all of these other different, you know, plants, trees within a larger ecosystem. And what is our role in that? Like, where do we fit as people within that much broader ecosystem within our planet? And then again, going like intergalactically, like where what purpose do we serve, or what intent do we pursue, I guess, or what intention do we sort of manifest? It's fascinating. It's really truly interesting.
Well, going back to the whole conjecture thing and going with the whole, maybe it's a planted setup we have here. I mean, maybe one of the reasons why, if they have planted like religion and some of the base moral standards that came along with it, with the tablets and whatnot that came down the mountain, I mean, maybe they're trying to prepare us not to be assholes once we get off planet.
Well, and there was one theory that kind of tied that together. Well, can I just so marriage, how many guys want to stick with one woman, right?
Hold on a second,
everywhere in every culture, that is, it seems to be, at least I've heard, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but almost every culture, it is taboo to have something other than monogamy. It's a taboo.
Where are you going with this?
Well,
like, this is a different show right now.
No. Yeah. If they taught us something and they wanted us mm-hmm. to, what's the reason? What's the reasoning for that? Well, if you all meet with everybody in your tribe, then, you know, in order to diversify the genetic, maybe I'm going out on a limit, but in order to diversify the genetic pool, you have to have, you know, a rule. I think there was a rule where you would have to go meet somebody from another tribe far mm-hmm. away that's not related to you and bring the tribes together through marriage. And mm-hmm. and that was one of the hard and fast rules of some of the older cultures because they didn't want intermarrying.
All right. Let me try to explain this real quick without aliens. So biologically...
I want to get to aliens, though. I want to bring this back into aliens.
Well, let me go real quick and then you can go back.
They don't want shitty livestock, so they made us do that.
Okay, maybe, but
sorry, that was not an evolution.
For genetic diversification, we are ingrained by evolution to want to mate with everyone. Like that's in our mm-hmm. DNA.
The men are. I don't think the women are.
Okay. So well, whatever. But that is okay. That is okay.
Typical
if you're
man.
In the wild, and you can fight with other males, right? Like rams butting head or bulls spearing each other. That's okay if you can fight. But in modern society, even in caveman society, when you're a hunter-gatherer tribe and your survival depends on interdependence and cooperation, then at that point in time, you can no longer have fighting over females. Like, it's just not good for social harmony. It's not good for mm-hmm. the health mm-hmm. of the males. Mm-hmm. So what we have is a biological desire to mate with everyone, and then a social construct, either by modern society or even much further back, to not fight with each other and to all get along. So that's why we have the monogamy taboo thing.
But I think you're right, but I think that, you know, the latter description is more of, as you said, sort of like the social construct. And mm-hmm. I wonder, going back into or moving more towards the primitive sort of framework of, well, because you look at other species, other non, I don't want to say non-social, but not like humans, right? Where mm-hmm. that's not the framework that they operate under. That, like, male chimpanzees or apes are not monogamous. And they're pursuing this other sort of evolutionary path where they are looking to impregnate or spread their genetic diversity as far and wide as humanly possible or apenly possible. But I guess, you know, what I wanted to go back to, you know, still in this sort of topic is, what if there is some sort of, and I'm struggling to think of another term than using the one that I'm going to use, which
just
is intelligent design. Like, what if, you know, biologically, you know, there is some sort of a external factor at play or force at play that is
like
driving.
We were evolved to build machines for the overlords.
Yeah. Yeah, are you saying intelligent design by literally a deity, a god, or
no,
by
the von Neumann probes? We were born to build them.
Or they're the same.
With a time delay.
Well, I mean, what's the difference, though, right?
Exactly.
I mean, what's the difference? I mean, yeah. You can
at one god, point, yeah.
But not like the Judeo-Christian god, but like the intelligent... Rather, the designer, or to pull a phrase out of the Matrix, the architect, right?
The software engineer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it truly is fascinating, though.
That's some pretty heavy shit.
Well, so why would they ingrain us with that problem then? They just want to see us like struggle. I mean, I don't understand completely the logic.
I hear. Well, I guess again, taking a few steps back. I mean. There's an assumption that I'm gonna sort of underscore that's kind of weaved throughout all of what we're talking about, or at least what I'm talking about, which is that we are not alone. There are other there is the other, other intelligent consciousness or beings or whatever, biological and non-biological entities that exist that theoretically could be, you know, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, a million years more advanced than us. And if that were the case, what, you know, they would be gods. I mean, I use that sort of term sort of loosely, but I mean, how else do you describe a advanced, and I'm going to say civilization, because again, I'm kind of falling into that, you know, mode that I described earlier of that tendency to anthropomorphize, you know, things that we are talking about. But what if there is some sort of thing that is significantly more advanced than us and may have had a hand in guiding our path? I don't want to say evolution, but whether it's through, I mean,
so you're saying evolutionarily we got this desire to mate with everyone, and then a outside civilization or whatever changed our culture? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, or I think it was mentioned earlier, yeah, this whole like zoo hypothesis, like what, right, if we are sort of a petri dish or a simulation, mm-hmm, or whatever, but there's
just, just an experiment.
There's exactly, and there's some, yeah, sort of an outside. Yeah.
That was the idea I was trying to get across, but I think like I'm like, oh, I just hurt my credibility by sounding like an idiot. But if you wanted to save me from that shame, thank you. I was like, or share it. I mean, but yeah, no, well,
you can do it with or without gene editing. I mean,
yeah. This is. I mean, but I mean, honestly, though,
without is more fun. I mean,
what is gene editing other than a way to transfer information biologically, right? And that is what it is.
Where did blue eyes come from?
If there is gene editing, I don't think that they would need to do abductions to do it. I think that they could have nanobots or viruses inside of us to do it.
Yeah, these are whole. Granted, that's a whole other bag of worms.
But why do you hear all of these instances of abductions involving capture of biological, you know, and specifically like you know,
anal probes?
We'll use the words, well, semen, whatever other else. Like, why is that of poop interest?
Poop. Yeah, maybe. Biological samples to see how the whatever is going. I mean, we do that with our livestock and stuff.
But that's a thing. Yep. That's an actual thing.
That's what we do to animals.
That's been exactly. And you know what's fascinating? At least in a little stat here, the most populous mammal species on Earth is humans.
Populous.
The second most most populous. The second most populous.
What's that word mean?
Cows. The cows. Populous is the most, like the most, yes, people.
The population.
Number of animals.
But animals, chickens. Bugs are animals.
The largest number of the species that accounts for the largest number of beings on this planet is humans.
No.
For mammals.
There's ants. Oh, yeah, okay.
And for mammals.
Maybe.
And second is cows. And I think like third is like sheep. But
I feel like chickens has to be up there.
Yeah, but that's an avian. Yeah. That's not a mammal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then you're good. Yeah, keep going.
And he missed arthropods entirely because they make up like most of things.
But it's interesting, at least for me. I mean, you know, you come to this, you know, planet and you're looking at the most abundant species.
Other than fungus and
mammal
trees.
Species. Yeah, the most abundant mammalian species. It's humans. There's like 9 billion or 7 billion.
Are you sure it wasn't mice at some point or something? It's not like, didn't we have plagues because of that?
Let's keep going.
But I'm like, aren't we like trying to like make sure we got our facts right? Anyways, I want to wrap up this particular discussion quick and then see if we can't move on. But yeah, go ahead, finish up. We'll see if we can finish up this particular one in a couple of minutes.
Well, I really wanted to get into this concept or idea of what is evil, because you've heard that in a lot of the you know, the discussions, you know, apparently, at least from some of the reports, that's got to be
that's a huge discussion. That's got to be a discussion for another show. I got to go pretty soon. All right. But well,
you can do whatever you want to do, Gabe, and then we can talk a little bit more after you leave.
Yeah, because I told everybody at the beginning what I was going to do, the little bit about.
Make sure your fiance does not watch the show.
Yeah.
Right. She doesn't. She does not want anything to do with this show.
That's another topic, like our significant others or friends that don't want to have anything to do with.
Oh no, it's not like that. She's just got her own interests. I mean, like, it's totally an innocent thing. It's not like, but like, I'm not gonna suck her into my, just like if I was like a car guy, I wouldn't make her work on the car if she didn't like to, you know what I mean?
What do you want to talk about, Gabe?
Well, I just wanted to give a quick rundown of what Kiwi told me about possibly the first step in maybe having lucid dreams so that you could control your dreams, why that might be important. And so I'll let you know what I did. What's that?
Or dangerous.
Well, the reason why I was doing this, and I'll tell you what I did first, I guess, and then I'll tell you why I was doing it. So, so what he said was to make sure that you start recording all your dreams you have, because we all have dreams every night. We recall about 60% of them, or 60% of people recall 50% of them or something like that, for about 5 to 10 minutes. And then almost completely, like they never happened, forget them. You guys all know this, right?
Yeah.
You recognize that this happens. Like, you can, like, I know I had a dream, but fine, it was a fucking cool dream. What the hell was it? If you don't really think about it, you will lose it completely as if it never happened, which is bizarre. It's really bizarre that that happens. So he said, step one, when you have a dream, as soon as you wake up, write it down. So I've been doing that, and I've been writing down my dreams for the last few nights. Now, I don't know if I should read them to you. They're just like a few lines of what I read or what I dreamed. And I don't know if it's, I'm not going to read too much into it. I'm just going to follow his, directions for this. So step one is to recognize that you're dreaming. Start getting into the habit of writing them down, and to build the skill that this is building. And I've noticed it actually, it helps a lot with the retention of the dream. Once you write it down and remember it, I have theories on why this could be, partially because the way that the brain is structured, half of it is segregated to the writing and half of it is segregated to nonverbal, and perhaps some of the stuff that's happening in your brain, once you communicate it to the other side, the memory is formed and solidified. But most people, they don't write it down, so you never remember it. It's really bizarre how well this works. And you start to remember more and more of your dreams. It's really interesting. Do you guys want to hear some of the dreams? Just for fun?
No, it's all right. Just go to step two.
Oh, man. but some of them are funny.
All right, you can go for it.
Okay.
It's your show, man.
All right. The first one. I was Kid Goku looking at a map with a girl with a motorcycle, telling her all the places I had lived on the map. I had traveled and lived everywhere. And that was the first dream. So, the second dream was I was sleeping in a room on the floor with a bunch of people, and some of the people started stabbing everyone, and I barely survived, and I had no meat left on one of my hands, and I wish I was dead. Then the third one was I remembered this only when I was shaving, looking in the mirror, and I said, I looked at my shoulders, and I was like, oh, there's no hair there. And I was like, I remember having a dream. I had hairy shoulder blades. What the hell?
Yeah.
Oh, and then, there's a dog. There's a dog that lives upstairs, and I made him eat poop. He pooped on the floor, and then I grabbed him, and I threw him, which is really mean, but. That was my dream. They don't technically mean anything, but not yet. So these are the weird, weird dreams that I've been having. And I guess this is kind of the norm. Now, to learn how to remember the dreams, he says, is the first step to... I've had other dreams, too. I'm not going to read them. I just thought, for example, how weird some of the weird dreams can be. I did a little bit of research into dreams. Apparently, men have dreams with men showing up in them twice as much, and violence in their dreams a lot. or like fear and running. So I got stabbed. That was violent. There was another one I didn't read out where I got into a fight in a bunker with two guys. I'm not like, you know, into that stuff that much, but the way that the dreams are kind of reflecting that after, and then I researched, I'm like, oh, okay. So those are normal dreams for men, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Now,
I think it's training for real life, honestly.
Could be.
No, yeah, seriously.
Could be. Yeah.
I think that's what the purpose of dreams are, like in evolution. I think that you play out real world scenarios
and think
of how to react.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, it helps us to decompress and process the stimuli from the day. Like when
I've heard that too.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, basically when we're lucid dreaming, that's fun stuff. But like whenever I started doing the dream journaling and stuff, yeah, the dreams get real dark.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're not super fun. Although when you do actually get the lucid dreaming working, that is the coolest shit ever.
So you've done it.
So did you follow the same steps that gave you outlining? Yeah.
When I was in high school, I got real interested in it and got good at it. But it messes with your sleep cycles, so I lost interest in it.
Yeah. Okay. So that's cool to hear that somebody else has done it. So that's what I'm trying to aim for next is what you said it messes up your sleep cycle, because what you're supposed to do is wake yourself up but not move. Is that right?
Yep.
Oh, that sounds scary.
Wake yourself up, but don't move your body, because as soon as you move your body, like that part of the brain that is like central for being awake, it'll take over the REM, and you don't want that. Yeah. So far I've been waking up, but it's because I've had to really pee, and then I couldn't do anything. I couldn't dream anymore until I went to the bathroom, and then by then it's done. So I got to figure out a way to wake up without having to go to the washroom.
So yeah, you need to basically implant a tell so that once you realize you're in the dream, it's just either that or when you wake up, go directly back to sleep. Bring the suggestion with you.
You can't go to the washroom or anything, or no? Oh, you've done it too?
Yeah, so the thing that I've used as my tell, the way that I've learned this is you can have like 3, 4, 5 different dreams in a night.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's because you have multiple cycles of REM sleep, which you were talking about. But also, I think it's just a transition of scenery. So in real life, I never teleport somewhere. Also, there's no inconsistencies. Like I'm not like wearing a blue jacket and then all of a sudden it's black. Like that doesn't happen. But in dreams, it does happen. So for me, when I realize in my dream that I just first of all, if something doesn't make sense at all, like it's just like stupid, like I'm eating pasta with like toothpicks or something, like just something retarded. If that happens, then I first of all know I'm in a dream because that doesn't make sense. And then second of all, if I have this scenery transition that's very rapid and I move to a different place or someone just shows up like out of nowhere, then I can also know I'm in a dream. And personally, I don't try to control my dreams as much. I just try to think that I'm in a dream and then enjoy whatever happens because I don't want the full like burden of having to plan everything that happens. I just like enjoying
them. It's like a movie instead of playing a video game.
Yeah, and I think also you need to try to go back as far as you can in your dream. So when you're writing it down, you usually start with the most recent thing that you remember, but just keep trying to go back further and further and further if you can.
Okay, so that's a lot of good tips, because I didn't know all three of you guys have done it. Is that crazy?
Yeah, I actually took psychology in high school too, so that's when I got into it.
I think we all took psychology in high school, didn't we?
That's interesting.
I thought it was mandatory.
No, sorry, mine was an elective.
Oh, okay. Maybe I just really liked psychology. So cool that it worked for you guys. I haven't gotten to the point where but I've only been doing it for 3 days. So, how long did it take you? It takes a couple weeks. Okay.
Because you have to like build that muscle, like you were saying, to like remember your dreams, realize you're dreaming, exactly what Templar was saying.
And, okay. Yeah. Once I get to that point, maybe I'll do another update. But Kiwis was saying some pretty interesting stuff, but also some non-specific stuff about how it can connect with you somehow getting information from somewhere else that's not you after being getting, but the first part is you have to get good at lucid dreaming because of some kind of awareness there that gives you a channel to
Yeah.
It gives you like that tuning to be able to exit your frame of whatever.
Templar, have you ever had an experience like that where like something just came to you that was important?
A few times. Yeah, I had a lot of weird experiences when I was a teen, but teen and early 20s. Interesting stuff, but I won't get into too much of that here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. So yeah, I just wanted to do a little update on that, and that's what I've been doing, and hopefully it plays out that I can gain like a little bit more of a foothold to doing that Stephen Greer type communication stuff, but I'm trying to go at it at a kind of a different angle. Yeah. Instead of trying to remember my last show, I said, well, I got that visit from kind of the Men in Black helicopter after I did the meditation. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they want to show up physically anymore because they might get shot down or something. So maybe I'm trying to go to them. Maybe we'll see, you know, it's really weird for me to say that, but I'll try.
I want to give you a few more tips in addition to what Kiwi has said. Did he tell you that you should write down in your journal that I will lucid dream tonight?
No.
Okay, so the way I learned it is, first, if you can't remember your dream, you should write down in your journal, I will remember my dreams tonight. Right. And then after you can remember your dreams, then you can start either thinking multiple times a day or writing it down in your journal.
Actually,
I will control my dreams tonight.
I think
then you'll somehow get the ability to.
You know what? I don't think he said those exact words, but I think he did. He did specify that to project that intention that you want to have, like, he may have used those words, but like basically it's the same thing that I did when I meditated and did the like communication to make contact. It was an intention, so maybe that's like part of the key to making this kind of universal consciousness click. Maybe you got to have that intention. And I think somebody was saying that last time too. Maybe part of the intention of thinking you can bend the spoon is really, you know, and then once nobody believes you and you lose the ability to feel like that intention, maybe it doesn't work so good anymore.
Yeah. And that goes back to the plants thing. I mean, how can a plant know my intention is to burn it? Yes. Just by my thinking that, they have an electrical response. How is that possible? If that can be verified by science, that makes absolutely no sense to me.
Yeah, we gotta figure out, like, just like, you know what? I think that I'm gonna throw this out there, but if we started doing like this show together on a regular basis, and if we ever did get a
monitor?
No. Well, yeah, but like because I'm not gonna buy it with my own money. But if we put up, what is it called?
Patreon,
and then we were completely open about it, what we did, and if we got you that metal or that not metal detector, that lie detector, so you could do those tests, and I do brain detector, and I do my tests. If we actually do these things, maybe we can start a Patreon and say, hey, this is what we're doing. These are the results we're getting. You know, this is why I think it is or isn't working. But, you know.
We could try to start with a GoFundMe for, like, a specific experiment and say that we'll release the results.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you guys wanted to, like, do something as the Sovereign Envoys, I'd be happy to have, like, a fund where we can, if people want to donate to that, that'd be awesome. We can be completely transparent with that. But then we can test our theories, right?
Yeah.
Because right now, you know, I got a wedding to plan.
It's just so theoretical.
Yeah, I got a wedding to plan, and I don't have any money. So anyways, all right, so cool. I hear a lot of yawning, so I guess it's time we wrap up.
It was a good show.
Yes.
Yeah, it was fun.
Any last words?
Nope.
No?
No.
Live long and prosper.
Nah.
That'll work.
All right, thank you everybody for listening, and if you want to reach us on the RUFO Discord or subreddit, this was Gabriel of Calgary, Red Templar, Theory QED, and Virgil. You just changed your name. Hey, your mic's working way better, by the way.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Yeah, super great.
Awesome, guys.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, and we'll see everybody next time. Cheers.
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 Yeah, bitch! Magnets! Oh!